Hello and welcome to another edition of Childhood Remastered. This is the podcast where we look back on the cartoons and TV shows and movies and whatnot of our youth and see if they're still worth a damn.
Or not.
Or not, which is far too often the case. I am Sean.
And I'm Chris.
And today, even though it is no longer October and no longer Halloween time, although Halloween time is really a year-round holiday for me, we have decided to do a listener request for a show that sort of fits that Halloween-type theme. It's a special request from a user in the podcast we listen to group, and that show is
Tales from the Crypt Keeper. So thank you, Tony Dutcher, for the request, and I guess Chris over at Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom reaffirmed the request as being a good choice, so thanks to Chris over there as well. Did you ever watch this?
I cannot say I did. I definitely had watched, probably without parents' knowledge.
Oh, I'm sure.
I had definitely watched the Tales from the Crypt show. It was a show that I didn't get a whole lot of opportunities to watch. It was like a very special type of thing because that show originally was broadcast on HBO. And whereas my grandparents had cable and I didn't, they didn't have premium cable. They didn't have like the HBOs and the Showtimes and whatnot. They got the basic package. So the only times I actually remember watching this show when it was on, because the original show went from like 89 to 90-something.
96.
Yeah. The only times I actually remembered watching the show was when I was at like an uncle's house or like a friend of a friend's house or something.
Not with parent approval.
And no, it was like, we're having a cocktail party. Why don't you go in our room and watch TV? And I'm like, okay, click, 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 click.
And so the thing is, for those of you who don't know what Tales from the Crypt Keeper or Tales from the Crypt is, Tales from the Crypt originally is a comic series. And it was a comic series done way back in the 50s. And then that was turned into a sort of, live action serial of the week sort of show.
It was an anthology show. If you've ever seen the movie Creepshow, it's an anthology horror movie from, I want to say, the mid-80s. It's kind of like that, except in TV form. It's a literal monster of the week or a horror story.
There is a Tales from the Crypt movie that was done in the 70s, as well as a Vault of Horror, which was another part of the EC Comics anthology series for the comics. There's actually three different comic series sort of all in the wheelhouse of, you know, this subject matter. So the first one was hosted by the Crypt Keeper, and then the second one was hosted by the Old Witch, and then the last was by a character named the Vault Keeper. And they each sort of had their own series. So the Crypt Keeper had Tales from the Crypt, and then the Old Witch had The Haunt of Fear, and then the Vault Keeper series was called The Vault of Horror. And the comic series ran from 1950 to 1955, and then it sort of had the kibosh put on it due to a lot of the censoring at the time of comics during the whole Red Scare and all of that. And then the show got brought around the TV series from 89 to 96, as Sean mentioned, which is 93 episodes. And what was sort of cool about the show was the show had... it was one of the very first examples of a show that had full freedom from censorship, by network standards and practices. Yeah. And so they had full nudity. They had dismemberment. They had gushing blood.
Lots of violence.
Lots of violence. And
as you would expect in a horror show anthology.
Yes. Which sort of gets to my experience with Tales from the Crypt and this Tales from the Crypt Keeper cartoon series.
Going back just to finish up.
Yeah.
I never saw the cartoon.
Really?
Ever. I never even heard of it. I didn't realize that it was on. I mean,
surprising.
When it came out, it was the primo time for me to watch it, and I don't recall watching it at all.
There's not that many episodes, so I guess it's understandable why, but still, my experience was, I remember the show, but I didn't watch that much of it. My cousin, I have three guy cousins who very religiously watched both the animated series and the show because they had no rules or censorship. So they could watch all kinds of stuff they weren't supposed to. My experience watching the HBO series was there was one episode that my brother and I got to watch about ghouls. Where this guy got eaten at the end. It was pretty gory. And I was, and it was 92, 93. So I was, 10. You know, yeah. Yeah. I was 9, 10 years old. I think it was 92, 93. And so it was a little bit of a traumatic experience. I remember being terrified of that episode for months. And then the show came out. And so I think I was actually sort of afraid to watch the cartoon show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was over at their house spending the night and we happened to watch a cartoon show and I was sort of almost disappointed because I thought it was going to be this terrifying blood gushing thing. You're 9 years old. What's your expectation of
stuff? That sort of leads to my first question about the show. And we brought up this question when we did our crossover with Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom, when we talked about RoboCop.
And when we were on their show for Toxic Crusaders.
So this is another example of a show, an original show, like the original property, I guess, in when you have it as a comic book, maybe it's intended for kids.
No, it's not. Okay. No. Yeah.
So in fact,
the TV show is a very, accurate adaptation. The HBO show is. In fact, they took stories
from the comics
and put them in. There were full episodes. I think we were talking about it beforehand. Robert Zemeckis, the one that he wanted to do, that's an original comic story. One he wanted to do.
So that's my question is, what Hollywood producer in 1989, 90 or whatever, when they started to go into pre-production for this, what producer was like, you know what would be good is if we take this like super violent, really kind of sexual, gory show that's on HBO and is breaking all these like censorship boundaries and barriers and such. Let's turn that into a kid's show because you could totally market that Crypt Keeper, you know, that rotting corpse as a cartoon character.
Well, it was developed that kind of to answer your question. In a way that does not answer your question.
Yeah.
It was developed by some people who I don't think had anything to do with the original series. That was developed by Libby Hinson, who has a screenplay for Land Before Time 6. And then she did write for TV shows like Crow, which is one I did super want to cover.
Hmm.
Do you remember that at all?
The name is familiar, but I...
The Crow is a play on Cro-Magnon, and it's a...
Yes,
he's
yes,
a
yes.
He's a Cro-Magnon man who lives with a Neanderthal family,
mm-hmm.
like during the Ice Age. And it was a show on ABC, I believe.
Okay.
Goof Troop, Tailspin, and a bunch of others. And then it was also developed by Ben Joseph, who wrote for the Bernstein Bears animated show Roly Poly Oly, and most recently wrote for the animated Hotel Transylvania series. You can find that on Netflix, actually. It's not bad.
I didn't know that there was a series.
Or maybe it's not on Netflix. I think I found it on a streaming website.
Okay.
Yeah. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
The show was actually produced, too, by Nelvana Limited, which was...
Ergo, our three producers for this project.
Yeah. Wasn't Nelvana... What was the other show that they did?
Care Bears?
Yeah.
Yeah, Care Bears.
What a varied and diverse portfolio Nelvana has.
Yeah, that and also Magic School Bus, Inspector Gadget. They did all kinds of stuff. So.
Yeah, and it was originally run on YTV in Canada and ABC in the States. And
that ABC listing is, it just feels weird.
Yeah, it's I think Disney had bought them at that point, right?
No.
No?
I think that was 96, 97.
Soon to be.
Yeah, and they did have like a close affiliation, because remember when we covered Mr. Boogity, we talked about how Mr. Boogity was covered as part of the Disney Wonderful World of Color that would show on ABC.
Yeah, and
ergo the versions that we posted on our site that you could find that have those commercials Juicy Fruit and all this other stuff. It's crazy.
Those great things. Yeah, the show itself, the cartoon now, the show was actually only 39 episodes over the course of 3 seasons, and the seasons are a little weird.
This is what we were talking about before.
Yeah, so you have the first 2 seasons that go from like 93 to 94, and then there's this big giant gap from 94 to 99 where there's nothing.
A 5-year gap.
And then the show gets renewed in 99 or picked up again,
called New Tales from the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, and the animation style changed. The voice of the Crypt Keeper is still the same, but the animation style changed. Sort of the tone changed.
The storytelling changes, too.
Yeah, and it's very noticeable. We watched, in some of the episodes that we watched 4 of the 4 of episodes from the first 2 seasons. Then we watched 1, which was the lowest rated one from the 3rd season.
Yeah.
Lowest rated overall, but it just happened to be from the 3rd season.
That's actually why I decided to do a lowest rated episode as a bonus, because I wanted to see what this 3rd season looked like.
Yeah.
Because everybody that I had seen talking about the show said the 3rd season's awful.
So the 3rd season...
And they're right.
They are right. The 3rd season, the animation style... And I'm sure that they changed animation studios somehow, maybe, you know, they were saving money or doing something different. You know, it had been 5 years, so I'm sure not a lot of those same people were still together at Nelvana. People leave and come and go fairly rapidly in that area, but it is just so bad. The animation is stilted and gross, and the stories are just dumb. They're dumb stories with these really ham-fisted morals, and it's almost like a, you know, did you ever watch it always was aired at the end of the Saturday morning cartoons in like the 80s, where you would have like the Saturday morning like special, where it would be some really ham-fisted story.
I know what you're talking about. So you're talking on Saturday morning
after all the cartoons were over.
It was like 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly.
To satisfy the quote educational guidelines that the networks wanted, then they would have on that's when you get those made for TV specials. Like
exactly.
Kids to wear their bike helmets or not to do drugs
or respect your elders.
And they were awful. They were super ham-fisted. Yeah, and I don't know of anybody who actually enjoyed them. They did them because they had to.
That's kind of what season 3 turns into. It's just this like, here's the moral, we're shoving it down your throat. And it's like weird to have a moral. I guess moral is the right word, but just like a lesson. Because a lot of horror stories, a lot of horror in general, like the genre of horror, because it's one of my favorite genres, the genre of horror tends to have a lesson. It's, you know, like in Jason, it was premarital sex and mistreating people. And when people would do that, they'd get punished for it.
The moral of all of those slasher flicks from the 70s and 80s was always, don't have sex because we kill the virgin. Don't be a dick because we kill a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And also don't be black. So
and don't do too many drugs.
Yeah, and don't do too many drugs. So if you are a virginal white woman, then you'll live. And every once in a while, if you're a guy, you might live too, but only if you don't satisfy any of the other...
if you're trying to save the virginal white woman.
Yes. Then you might live, but you also might die saving her, but she'll still live.
Yeah.
So it's weird because what I liked about Tales from the Crypt, the live-action HBO show, is they always usually sort of turn that on its head.
Yeah.
And that is sort of transferred over into this animated show where they'll have, like, what you think the moral is going to be... And then they just kind of flip it on its head at the end.
Yeah.
And it's like they'll kill the hero or the villain ends up, the monster ends up sort of being an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Or, like there's one that I saw, it's a vampire one that I watched an episode of doing the research. I watched an episode of Tales from the Crypt because I wanted to see it. And so the basic gist of that story is there's a vampire in town and nobody knows who it is and trying to hunt him. And this guy claims to be a vampire hunter and he's going to kill the vampire. And this other guy who's sort of a sleazy dickbag is this guy who thinks he knows who the vampire is. Vampire turns out to be this guy who's like sort of a nice guy. And he sort of ends up in this confrontation with the vampire, and the vampire knocks him out, puts him in the coffin, and then the vampire hunter opens up and stabs and kills the human instead of the vampire, and the vampire lives happily ever after.
Hmm.
So they always have these sort of like, it's like they intentionally let the monsters escape because it's scarier when there's no true resolution.
Yeah.
And I like that actually about the animated series too, because there's a lot of that here as well.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Let's jump back to the producers. So we talked about Libby Hinson. We also have Ben Joseph. These are the writers actually, that helped develop it. So
yeah,
Ben Joseph, you talked about him, Berenstain Bears, Roly Poly Ollie. The producers, we have Michael Hirsch, who, he actually produced the Tales from the Crypt TV series on HBO, the live action with the puppets.
Hence our tie into how we got this show. So yeah. To answer your question, that's how we got it.
Yeah. He also produced Beetlejuice. He did Care Bears in Wonderland. He executive produced My Pet Monster, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, Dog City, which we did previously, and Free Willy, the animated series. I didn't know that we needed to say anything more about Free Willy that wasn't said in the first two movies.
Oh.
Does he keep getting recaptured? That's like that show Prison Break. How many times can you break out of prison?
I guess just the once.
Yeah, a bunch more of those scenes of Willy jumping over.
Yeah!
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember. I think, did Hirsch help found Nelvana, correct?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, he co-founded with our next guy on this list, Lou Baer, who...
Patrick Lou Baer.
Yeah, and then a third guy who did not work on this series, but it's a guy named Clive A. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick Lou Baer also produced the first season of Inspector Gadget and created the TNT show starring Mr. T, which is actually a live-action series.
Huh.
It's a sort of pseudo-sequel to the A-Team that's not... anything to do with the A-Team is a sort of like a vague ripoff.
Interesting.
And then the other producer is Patricia R. Burns, who was the coordinating producer from The Magic School Bus, The NeverEnding Story animated series, Eek Extravaganza, and Beetlejuice animated series. So we may end up covering Beetlejuice at some point because that's on our request list. So
yeah.
I think though, you touched on two things that I really want to cover. And the first, actually three... My Pet Monster is one, because I have a lot of memories of that stupid toy with the chain.
I had the toy, but not... I don't remember the show, but I had the toy.
Yeah, see, I'd seen
like
the...
You'd press a thing and his hands would break up. Yeah,
would break the chains?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Cadillacs of Dinosaurs,
I know that that's your, like, holy grail right there.
It's not my holy grail, but it's, like, in my list of stuff that just... I don't know, to be fair, I don't know much about that particular property.
You know,
and just the idea of a fucking Cadillac and a dinosaur together in an animated series just seems really weird.
You want us to cover all the dinosaur ones. Maybe we'll have a dinosaur month where we'll do Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, Dino Riders, Dino Saucers, and Dino City or something.
I'll put on my footy pajamas and we'll have a throwback to our like early childhood.
Yeah.
And then also Free Willy, because really... As you said, what more was there to say about Free Willy after the three live-action movies?
I didn't know there was three. I thought there was only two.
It's a terrible waste of film, Sean.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about the theme music because essentially it's just a retooling of the theme from the original show.
Yeah, it's got some. The theme music, like you said, it's basically they took the theme music from Tales from the Crypt and they just sort of made it a little bit more lighthearted. But I like the intro of... In the show, what happens in a lot of the episodes is you have... We mentioned the three original hosts of those different shows. You had the Crypt Keeper, the Vault Keeper, and the Old Witch, the Old Hag. So in the show, you have... In certain episodes, you have one or both or all three of those people essentially fighting to tell the story of whatever's going on that day. So
sometimes a Crypt Keeper loses out on that, but he usually ends up winning.
Yeah, so you have the Old Hag that like steals the book from him and then does something to incapacitate him, or you have the Vault Keeper who tries to incapacitate the Crypt Keeper. So the witch, yeah.
Yeah.
So in the intro, when the theme music is playing, you have the witches And I don't know if the Vault Keeper's in it, but the witches are coming and like trying to get to the vault, to the Crypt Keeper to take the book from him. And then when they get to him, they fling the book up, and then that shows like a comic book, all the different stories that will be told.
Which is
or
a
have
sort of
told.
Like homage to the original comic series, which is cool.
Yeah. So I actually liked the intro. I watched each time. I did too.
And I watched the intro also because Eleanor loves the intro. She loves the song. Which I kind of understand why. It's done by Danny Elfman.
Yeah, and it's not a theme song like with words. Like there's not theme song. It's more of a theme music.
Yeah, it is sort of iconic though. I feel like once you've heard it, if you heard it at any point in your life, and then you hear it again, you go, "This sounds familiar," and I don't know why. And then it will kind of click.
Yeah, Danny Elfman. It definitely sounds like a little bit of Oingo Boingo, like psychedelic stuff a little bit.
Yeah, Danny Elfman has a very specific way of doing music, of composing. And we've talked about this before. And I know you and I have talked about possibly doing some of his other more prominent projects in our future. But his music is just so super iconic. And I guess the reason why I kind of wanted to gloss over it originally, but, you know, we don't have to, is that for the animated series, they just took the live action, copy and pasted from the live action, the theme music, and added in a few synth sounds, and that was about it.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's its own individual thing.
Yeah.
I mean, even the...
It's like a remix.
Yeah, like Beetlejuice, the animated series, is a sort of reworking of... It's like in the style of Beetlejuice, but it's that na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
But it's different. They change it, and they make it different. But this is just, it feels like the same.
It's the same.
So, but it's good.
Same, same, but different.
It's good. Yeah, that's not to wash over that it's good or not. So,
Let's move on to the cast. And because this show is an anthology show, we're really going to only cover three main characters. Three main people that are in... Every episode or almost every episode.
And if we didn't do this, if I went through every person on the list, there'd be over 50 ensemble cast members, some of which only did one episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the show. The show, the HBO show was an anthology show. So there was a different actor, actress, different cast in every episode, essentially. They reused some people sometimes.
Well, the original show had, I mean, you had people like Ernie Hudson and Bob Hoskins and Tim Curry and, you know...
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Robert Patrick.
Dan Aykroyd. I mean, you had all of these, you know, Isabella Rossellini. You had all of these, Adam West. I mean, you could just name somebody from that period and they were in it. And then, you know, you had people like Zemeckis directing episodes or Michael J. Fox or Tom Hanks directing episodes. Mm-hmm. So they had this sort of like rotating cast, and that carries over here too, where you have, you know, you have one person who plays one character in one episode, and then that character might actually end up getting reused in another story.
And it did in two
of the episodes we did.
Yeah, there was multiple characters that were reused.
And they were different voices.
Yeah.
There were two different people. So, you're right. I guess you could call it my own laziness. I just didn't
No,
really
I mean
do...
it's not it's like going to any It'd be essentially like going to the additional voices section of any animated movie and trying to list off all those people. You know, there's tons of people that are involved in animation, and we're just going to talk about the principles here. So the first character is the Crypt Keeper, obviously. He's the main host of the show. And much like the HBO show, what happens is you have a little short, maybe 2 minute long vignette with the Crypt Keeper at the beginning. He bookends the show. So the Crypt Keeper will be in the beginning and he'll be at the end of each episode, where he'll set up the story and then at the end he'll like recount the moral or the lesson or whatever you were supposed to get out of that episode. And in the he's toned down in look and attitude,
it
action.
Sort of soften him up quite a bit,
because in the original show he is literally a rotting corpse. He is a desiccated mummy looking guy with no nose and holes in his skin,
like a dead body that was left out in the hot sun for 3 years.
Yeah, like a mummified dead body. So they really soften that up, and so that he's sort of this green zombie-looking guy, a little bit.
Vaguely ghoulish. Yeah. That's about it.
But he is dead. He talks about how he is undead.
Yeah, he does. And he's, and they draw him like with this weird sort of mottled blue skin tone, which is sort of odd because in the show, the live action is brown. Of course, I mean, it could have just been TV at the time. Everything
they might not
sort
have
of looked brown.
Well, they didn't. They probably didn't want him looking like a literal corpse on TV.
Yeah, for kids. You know, you don't want little kids going to Brown Town accidentally getting too scared. So it's voiced by John Kasser, who is most known for his role as the Crypt Keeper on the HBO series, but he was also Miko the Raccoon in Pocahontas and Ray Raimundo Rocket on Rocket Power, and he's done some other stuff too. But he's very well known as this character. He's sort of like hyper iconic.
Yeah, and while watching, I text Chris this while I was watching. If you aren't familiar with Tales from the Crypt, the Crypt Keeper and Robot Chicken did a sketch on this too. The Crypt Keeper is the pun master. That's all he does. 80% of his dialogue is puns.
He's like the grandmaster of dad jokes.
Yeah, he'll say, "Have a good fright, children, boils and ghouls." Yeah, it's just that constantly. It's every other word.
And then his cackle is always, yeah.
Every other word is a pun. It's some kind of wordplay or some kind of joke about being undead.
And it's always like a elbow ribbing the guy next to him. Is like, hey, you get it? You get my joke? Got it? Yeah? But for little kids, Eleanor thought the jokes were funny.
I'm sure she did.
And I didn't mind them. We've definitely seen worse dad jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, we've definitely seen worse dad jokes and puns. Think back to Scooby-Doo.
Or you could just think to any regular conversation with me.
That's also true. That's also true. So the next character, the Old Witch, is in one of the episodes that we're covering. Two episodes, I think, that we covered.
Yeah.
And it's voiced by Elizabeth Hanna, who we previously mentioned as the voice of Rosie O'Grady on Dog City. But she's a voice actor who is a speech pathologist. We discussed this before. And she's done stuff on Care Bears and Babar, Wildcats, Sailor Moon. She was, I believe, the original voice of Serena on
Sailor Moon,
the first dubbing brought to the United States. And she worked on Beetlejuice, the animated series, The Legend of Zelda animated series. She's done a bunch of stuff. And then the last character is the Vault Keeper, who is voiced by David Hemblin. And he is not technically in any of the episodes that we covered.
He was in the beginning of one of the episodes.
Very briefly. Yeah. And he has done a bunch of characters on Captain Power and the Soldier of Fortune. I don't know if you know anything about Captain Power.
I don't.
That is actually a live action Captain Power.
Huh.
Yeah, we got to do that one. He was Jonathan on Earth Final Conflict that I've mentioned before, that Gene Roddenberry project.
Yeah.
And then he was Magneto from the X-Men animated series from the 90s.
Yeah, and his voice in this was kind of like Magneto's, I noticed.
He
had that sort of...
I guess, stuck up.
Yeah, he seemed very aloof and aristocratic.
Yeah, and I think that'll do it for the cast. There's really not a whole lot to discuss other than that. Maybe let's just discuss the show if you want.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the episodes. So we watched 5 episodes. For these type of shows that when we don't have a whole lot of knowledge of stuff, and we don't want to rewatch specific episodes to see how they held up. You know, I can pick episodes of certain shows out and be like, yeah, I totally remember that episode. I want to watch it again. For stuff like this, we just turned to IMDb and looked for the highest rated episodes just to see what it was like. But in this case, we also threw in the lowest rated episode because we, you know, you got to take the bad with the good and see what the whole show is like.
Well, and originally, in the past, we've sort of... Before we cover the episodes, in the past, for those of you who've been listening for a while, our flesh bros out there.
Our flesh brothers.
We have kind of gone through sort of different iterations of our coverage of episodes. So in the very beginning, we would cover the first 6. And then over time, we decided we're going to each pick a couple. Yeah. And then sometimes we'll cover the first 5. The truth is there's really no rhyme or reason. We cover whatever the fuck we want to.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
If and someone has a request for a specific episode, we'll cover it because...
Yeah. So far, all the requests... We have a sort of a growing request list that we're going to really try and eat into in the beginning of the next year. It for those people who have sent in requests, I guess we'll try and contact all of you and see if you had something for the TV shows. If you had specific episodes or just more the broader... concept
just the show. I like the show. Do the show.
So I think with this one, it was important for me because the animation changed and there was a 5-year gap that we just it was good for us to cover it.
Oh yeah.
So to give you an idea in the ratings, so the first 4 episodes that we covered are in IMDb order. They're rated from 7.6 down to 7, and they are season 2 episode 8, season 1 episode 8, season 2 episode 9, season 2 episode 10. And then the lowest rated episode is rated a 5.6, and it's season 3, episode 5. So what do you say we
jump? Let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
So the first episode that we watched, I don't know if you watched them in this order, highest to lowest, like I did.
I did, too.
Okay, so the first episode we watched was season 2, episode 8, Growing Pains. Now, this introduces the characters of Wendell, who is a nerd, and the new girl at school, Rose. And then his two tormentor bullies, who are Chet and Louie. And the story is pretty simple. I mean, it's a kid's show, so I don't feel like super impressed with myself that I figured out what the twist was going to be fairly early on.
No.
But
Eleanor, I mean, was surprised.
For a kid's show, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I thought that they did a really good job with sort of holding back the exposition.
Yeah, so this episode is about a nerd who is obsessed with plants, who gets bullied by these two guys, Louie and Chet, and a new girl comes to class, and she also loves plants, so he, immediately forms a connection with her. And the more we learn about the girl, the more we come to realize that the girl is actually a human plant.
Yeah, yeah. And there are some moments in this episode that are sort of creepy.
There's also,
I don't mean creepy in the way that they meant it to be creepy. Creepy in that, in the very beginning, Rose is walking in the park and Wendell, our nerdy protagonist, is stalking her.
Or at least...
And he tells her he's, quote, collecting specimens in the park. And I thought maybe more like making specimens.
I was going to say he's depositing specimens.
See, our brains are now tied.
Yeah. I'm pollinating these flowers, baby.
He was about to. There's this point where he's getting, it's maybe about midway through the episode, and he is getting chased by the bullies. And he then sort of rages and gives, like, the lamest speech about how terrible they are.
You know what this
before
is?
Before they toss him in the garbage.
You know what this reminded me of? This speech. This speech reminded me of every insult and thing that Jules said in the Back to the Future animated series.
You two are nothing but uncouth ne'er-do-wells whose only reason for being is to plague innocence with your mindless juvenile pranks and Stone Age humor. The truth hurts, doesn't it?
It's just saying smart words because you know them.
Yeah.
Like,
and
nobody
it's irritating.
Like, I've met a lot of smart people in my life. Like, really smart people.
I like that after he says that, too, he goes, sorry for the foul language back there.
Yeah.
Like, one, there's no foul language, and two, you're just going to get put in a dumpster again for saying that dumpster.
I feel like... I don't want to sound elitist here, but I feel like this is how dumb people think smart people talk.
Oh, I'm sure it's how dumb people think smart people talk.
It's like, nobody goes around going, you vile Cro-Magnon excuse for a habitual... Like, you don't throw in $10 words just to throw them in. You do that because, one, you're an asshole, and you want people to know that you're smart. And,
or think that you are.
Or think that you're smart. Or... two, you are completely socially inept, and that's actually how you speak, and that's why you have no friends, which is could be the case.
Yeah, I'm gonna put money on the latter. I think he's just sort of
and you can see in the show that he has no friends. His friends are the plants.
I get the whole being a nerd and doing your own thing and like that I 100% get.
Oh yeah.
100,000%. But don't
talk like a douchebag.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the whole goal, like, when you were this nerdy, I will just say from my own perspective, my goal when I was his age was to just not get picked on.
Yeah.
That was, like, my entire existence through elementary school and junior high. Just don't get picked on.
Be invisible.
Just try to live through puberty. That was the goal. Survive it until I'm big enough. Hopefully I outgrow some of these assholes. But at the same time, like, I mean, yes, I sympathize with his plight. But I also, when they throw him in the dumpster, I always felt like, good.
Yeah, you deserved it.
Yeah, you're a dick. You're also kind of creepy because you're stalking this girl through the forest.
I mean, and, to be fair, she is the most attractive girl at the school. In as much as you can be attracted to a teenage animated flower person.
Well, and the thing is I think going back to your whole, I think he's just like awkward and like, to get to that, he has, when they end up at her house and they're in her house, he has this line where he goes, "Need house." And she goes, "You really think so?" And he goes, "Sure, it has a sort of creepiness about it. I like that in a house." I mean, just, like, if you're trying to make it happen, that is not the way. Not the way.
"Hey, baby, I like how creepy your house is."
And then he wants her to be his science partner. So, you know, yes, at the end of the day, she is the...
Her name is Rose because she's a rose.
Yes, she's as pretty as a rose. And that's a line that he uses because the writing is what it is.
Yeah.
But there is sort of a, like, a creepy aunt who...
Her name is Fern.
Her name is Fern. And it's like, okay, Rose, Fern, loves plants.
We never got to hear what her parents' names were, though. I'm assuming they were also some kind of...
Some sort of dumb plant, yeah.
Plant, huh?
At the end of it, though, I like this episode.
No, it was good. It had that twist that you saw coming because you're an adult, but like you said, Eleanor didn't see it coming. So for a kid, this was a good twist. And for this being the highest rated episode, I could totally see why it was, because you have, like, it's a simple story, but it's told kind of well.
There are some other episodes that I saw that we didn't cover that I think I liked a little more.
Hmm.
But, or not so much that I liked them more, so much as...
You thought they were better?
No, I don't. I mean, I think this is technically, quote, maybe the best episode of the ones that I've seen. But I think the twist at the end of two of the other episodes that I watched, the ones I was telling you about, the one with the museum, mm-hmm. where the guy essentially gets murdered and turned into a piece of the museum.
Yeah.
And then another one where a guy's fishing and it turns out that the fish underwater are fishing for humans and they reel the guy in and he essentially gets killed and caught by fish. That's really clever. And I felt like the twist was better. But outside of that, I get why this is the highest rated one. The next episode is Hide and Go Shriek, which gives us sort of the same cast again.
It is all the same cast, essentially.
Almost the same cast.
You have Wendell, you have Louie, and you have Chet. And a new bully. A new bully named Rex. And what's funny about this one, I thought...
Actually, his name is Revis, but he goes by Rex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what I thought was funny about this one is that... In the first episode, in Growing Pains, Chet and Louie were absolutely his, like, tormentors. They chased him down, they grabbed him, they beat him up, they threw him into things. But in this episode, they're somewhat more sympathetic to him.
Well, see, this is where...
This comes a full season before the last
episode. So I think what happened was is the incidents of this episode occur... And then by the time they get to the second season, they've grown up some.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's some animus towards his character as a result of what happened here.
Yeah.
Except that they should still be afraid of him after what happens in this episode.
Yeah.
Also, the twist for this, you can tell right from the beginning, because Hide and Go Shriek is spelled Hyde.
Uh-huh.
And then he has a pet rat named...
Mr. Hyde?
No, oh, no, Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah, that's right.
And then a scene of him taking a potion. So, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's going to happen.
What I thought was funny about this episode was that the character of Rex, he is just a stereotypical big, strong, dumb jock bully. Like, he all he does when you see him is he is working out. He's doing push-ups and sit-ups.
Or talking about working out.
Yeah, talking about working out. Or he's tormenting Wendell. And Wendell, for his part, is really okay with it. He's just like, oh, you guys are just teasing me. It's fine. He doesn't take any of it too seriously or too harshly. And that pisses off Rex. Louie and Chet are like, well, that's kind of cool that he's like in on the joke, that he, you know, they do some stuff where like, where they're playing football and
they mess with his shorts.
Well,
right?
Yeah. And Rex sends him out for a long pass. And yeah, they mess with his shorts and he ends up crashing into a fruit stand. And then he comes back and he goes, oh, well, you know, that's a good way for me to get my, you know, five a day or whatever. And then Wendell and or Chet and Louie are like, wow, Wendell can really take a joke. That's really kind of cool.
Well, and at Rex one point, he defends the bully when they're in the locker room getting bullied.
Yeah,
and
he bails him out.
He bails him out. Why? I don't know. I don't know what the writers were thinking on that.
But what's funny to me is that Rex gets even... Rex essentially wants Wendell to be miserable. And he's pissed off that Wendell can just sort of brush the stuff off and be okay with what they're doing to him. And he's like, no, I'm going to fucking get this little prick and I'm going to make him wish he was never born. Like, what a fucking sociopath.
Well, and then his way of, quote, getting back at him is letting his pet rat loose in the school.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is a super dick move to do, but like, if you're going to like really destroy him, you
Well, he says that the rat is his best friend. So, yeah, he, like, lets him go.
He's his only friend.
Yeah, but then he goes to, like...
Well, Wendell then decides he's going to start weightlifting, and he does have a funny line that I liked.
No time for humor, fellas. I'm serious about this. I'm bulking up. Look. Feel this. Ouch. Don't break it. It's the only one I've got.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good.
And I was like, good show, writers. Good show.
Yeah, and this is the part where... It seemed like Chet and Louie were being really sympathetic to him because they like help him out a little bit in the weight room. And then I can't remember if it's Chet or Louie says, oh, my dad owns a health food store. Well, maybe there's something there we can give you. And then they give him this magic tea that was there when his dad bought the store that has a picture of the Crypt Keeper on the bottom of it.
So they sell him the tea for $40.
And they give him three tea bags.
$40! Let's go squander it needlessly.
Yeah, like, and that was really funny.
I thought that was really clever. And so it's like lines like that that kind of make me like this episode more than the
one. A little bit, yeah.
The other one that we watched. And I don't know if it's because it was the first season, you know, when they did 13 episodes with a single season. And so they're just like, we're just going to... Just see what we can do with the writing.
And but, see, the twist, too, on this episode... Well, I guess it wasn't really a twist. I had concocted a twist in my head, and I texted you about it while I was watching it. Is
trying to remember which one.
I was convinced while watching it. Maybe I didn't explain it while...
Oh, yes, so you I did.
Was,
yes.
I was convinced while watching this episode that the magic tea didn't actually work. And that... So what happens is, Wendell drinks the tea, or... Wendell drinks the tea, and then this monster appears, like a werewolf appears, and starts wreaking havoc in town. So he has three tea bags, right? So three doses. So the first one, the werewolf appears and starts destroying parts of the town. And then the second time, Rex confronts Wendell and is like shoving him in a dark alley and is ready to beat the crap out of him. And then Wendell gets shoved into the darkness with his thermos. And then the next thing you see is Wendell coming out as the monster. You see the monster come out, and then it chases. There's a whole sequence where it chases Rex down, and then Rex ends up getting the rest of the tea, drinking it all from the rest of the tea from Chet and Louie, drinking it all and turning into a much bigger monster that then gets captured and taken away. But I thought that the twist was going to be, and I was thinking too much, I guess. I thought that the twist was going to be that Wendell, that the tea never worked. And there was an actual monster out there that Rex thought was Wendell. So he was going to try and confront the monster and then get destroyed, killed, whatever. Because he confronted the monster thinking it was Wendell. And then Wendell was going to show up during the confrontation and be like, Rex, what are you doing? And he's like, what? You're not the monster.
And then have him help Rex. And then I thought
that was going to be the twist.
I feel like the way that they wrote it was more about...
It was a bully's comeuppance.
Yes, it was a self-empowerment episode for the little guy. There's the episode here, it turns out that Wendell, because he's obviously smarter than the rest of them, this is all part of his plan.
Yeah.
His entire plan was, I'm going to take the tea and kind of rampage through. They're going to know. They're going to take the tea. Rex is going to take it, and he's going to come after me. And so then he let Rex take the tea and get turned into a werewolf, and then leads him through the city rampaging, and then the police trank him with a trank gun, capture him, and then take him off to be experimented on.
Yeah.
And he gets to go back to school, and then... he still has some more tea left.
Yeah, they make a point to show the thermos.
Yeah.
And he's looking around going like, who's next, motherfucker?
I like this episode.
Yeah, this episode was really good. The next episode was, as I was watching it, I was like, what the hell are they trying to do here with this episode? It was like, they were trying to do like a noir detective type thing with the voiceover. So the next episode is season 2, episode 9, Brothers Gruff. And this episode is about a kid who's the youngest brother in a family, and basically he lives with a shithead brother who blames him for everything, an older brother who blames him for everything.
Like, he'll make messes and then blame it on his little brother, and the parents are dumb enough to go with
it. The parents believe him, yeah. And he does this voiceover.
Gladys!
Horace!
Eddie!
Give you one guess who Eddie is.
All right, you think I...
In the Gruff family, I'm the little brother. The guy at the end of the pecking order. No matter what, I get the blame. No thanks to my pig of a big brother, Horace. Sometimes I wished I had someone to pass the buck to. Like my own little brother. Or a dog. But all I had was Fred. No one's gonna believe a gerbil ate my homework. But I could never rat you out, Fred. We're pals.
And it's like he's explaining the situation, you know, a la
film noir.
Yeah, where he's like, yeah, I didn't like that I had to live with my little brother or with my older brother. But you know, what else can you do? That kind of stuff. It was
sort of. I mean, I get what they're trying to go for, and I like that they were taking the effort. I just felt like...
It was a little bit of a misfire.
It was a little... Yeah, it was a little ham-fisted for me.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing with this episode is that, you know, you've got two brothers, Eddie and Horace, and Eddie's the younger brother.
Eddie won the name lottery there.
Yeah, he did. And he's got a pet gerbil named Fred, so even the gerbil won the lottery. Compared to the brother.
To Dr. Jekyll.
I don't know why, but anytime I think of somebody with a pet gerbil, and I can't help it, I always think back to the urban myth about Richard Gere.
Oh, jeez. You know,
and I know that it's not true. I know it's not true, but like, it's where my brain goes every time, especially with something from this era. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure the people at this time knew about that. Like,
yeah.
You know, so that all kids, like, at that age on the playground were talking about it.
Yeah.
For sure. So it was definitely something that was going around.
Now, while I was watching this episode, because I watched it out in the living room, actually yesterday I watched it, and Kathy was there. She was doing something else, but I had it on the TV, and Eddie calls Horace pig face. He says, with my pig face brother, and they make a point to draw Horace's face looking kind of weird. But when he said that, he's like, I live with my pig face brother. I hear Kathy from around the corner in the kitchen or whatever to go, did he just say his fuck-face brother? I was like, no,
I wish. That would have been great.
Pig face, but that's much better.
It's probably what he wanted to say. Yeah. There's this thing where the whole thing with this story is that Eddie has a dentist appointment that he has to get to. And so his mom makes him take a shortcut across a bridge with his friend.
That he's terrified of.
And he's terrified of going across the bridge because of he's got this friend of his who is a full-blown, literal tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Like, underground lizard people chemtrail conspiracy theorist.
It's a combination of... His friend is a combination of Fox Mulder and...
Alex Jones?
Well, no, I was going to say Dean and what's his face?
Oh,
Winchester.
Oh, the Winchester brothers. Yeah,
it's like a combination.
Dean
of,
and Sam.
Yeah, a combination of Sam and Dean Winchester and Fox Mulder because it's a.
If he was morbidly obese.
Yeah, he's a conspiracy theorist monster expert,
and he's claiming that there's an ogre under the bridge.
Troll. There's a troll.
Sorry, No, it turns out originally he's afraid of an ogre, and then it turns out it's actually a troll. That's the whole twist, is like, there's a real troll under the bridge, but they thought that there was an ogre that lived there, and then the actual twist at the end is that it turns out there really is an ogre under the bridge, too.
Yeah.
So there's an ogre and a troll both under the bridge.
So the troll follows him home after he crosses the bridge.
Causes mischief.
Yeah, causes mischief, gets him in trouble. And then he has to steal, or he has to trade back for his brother. And the episode to me wasn't that great.
No, this particular episode was not great. Eleanor liked it, but it wasn't really like my jam.
Yeah.
I mean, I get what they're trying to go for. And I will say that when they get to the end, when Horace gets kidnapped and Eddie and his friend go to try and save him, that whole part was sort of interesting where they're like negotiating.
Yeah,
they
had plan A, plan B, and plan C. And what was plan A? Plan A was
just to try and negotiate.
No, plan A was to try and convince the troll that having his brother was more trouble than it was worth. He's like, look, I'll take him off of you.
Oh, that's right.
And the
right.
troll was actually giving him stuff. He's like, no, take him. Here, take all this stuff too.
And then plan B was to negotiate.
Trade, well, yeah,
and
was
then
to
plan
trade
C was to like actually work to try and get out of there.
Yeah, plan C was to pretend to be a giant ogre and to scare. Because apparently in this universe, the only thing trolls are afraid of is ogres. So they dress up like an ogre.
Yeah.
And there's actually a scene.
Name is Sheldon.
Yeah, Sheldon.
I know.
If you didn't know that the thing was a fake, because you don't know until the end, the fake ogre actually eats Eddie.
He's like, no,
and he goes into the mouth like a
inflatable, crawls inside.
Yeah, like an inflatable sports mascot getting eaten. That gif of the Toronto Raptors inflatable raptor eating the cheerleader.
Okay, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
The episode essentially ends with
Horace believing in stuff and them using that knowledge to like treat him like shit.
Just screw with him.
Yeah. He's like, I'll never blame anything on you ever again.
Then they get him to do a bunch of like dumb stuff.
Well, they put a bunch of crap in like a shower cap and make him wear it.
It was like a rotten meat and like a bunch of other like random
like
stuff.
Like all the shit that you used to do as a kid at the restaurant table when your parents weren't looking. You're like, let's take my soda glass and fill it with ketchup and mustard and salt and pepper
and all this stuff.
And oh yeah, the remnants of my soup and this little bit of food and now drink it. No, drink it.
Okay.
Pussy.
For a dollar? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we weren't allowed to eat out very often. Cause we very seldom got to eat out when we were younger, and the few times that we did, it was to like a soup exchange or soup plantation.
Yeah.
Because it was my brother and sister and I, and it was usually my three cousins, because the six of us were always together. And the only place that they could afford to feed
all of you,
all of us, was a place where it was all you could eat. Because especially once we started getting, when the us older kids started getting into junior high and high school, like we could just really pack it away. And like 8x8 with double order of fries all day.
I remember those good times.
Yeah. Yeah. Now those good times are thigh times.
Yeah. I'm starting my diet tomorrow.
I know. We're going to do the
challenge.
The challenge.
I was meal prepping before you got over here.
Oh, that's what you guys were cooking.
Yeah. I was meal prepping, and it doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but some chili, some salads, and some... We're going to make those egg cups where you crack an egg into a muffin tin, and then you put in like bacon and sausage. And then you bake it, and then you just have that for breakfast.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, the next episode is season 2, episode 9. It's the next episode. So we actually did the three of the highest rated episodes are season 2, episode 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, we just covered season 2, episode 9. And then the next is season 2, episode 10.
Uncle Harry's Horrible House of Horrors.
I like this one.
This one, the premise of this one just pissed me off. Just not even the premise of like the spooky shit that happened. The premise of just the episode in general. You got this stick-in-the-mud asshole uncle who somehow agrees to take his nephew to a carnival for his birthday, but then shits on everything the kid wants to do.
And he tells the kid, we'll let you do one ride. Like, we're going to go to the carnival, you ride one thing, and then you have to go home afterwards.
He tells
him... And then everything that he wants to ride, he tells him no.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point of coming?
Why did he even come? His wife,
his
aunt, was more than willing. Like, she kept saying, like, what are you doing? Let him ride the ride. Let him play the game. Why are you saying no to everything? And he basically tells her to fuck off and go get her fortune read.
And you can tell she's like, F this, I'm going to Craigslist. I'm going to go pick up some tail.
Yeah,
like,
no.
She's not... I don't think Aunt Dorothy is going to ride this marriage all the way to the end. I'll put it that way.
She's maybe putting a little something extra in his coffee to maybe make sure that this marriage doesn't last as long as it should.
I was thinking she's putting a little something on the side from somebody else.
But, oh, no, I'm going the arsenic and old lace route.
Oh, okay, sure.
Poisoning him.
Why not?
Black Widow.
Well, the kid finally wants to go on a haunted house ride with his uncle.
The uncle's like, nah, fuck it. And he's like, come on, it's the one I want to go on.
But the uncle says,
I'll bet it'll be real scary on the inside. I bet it will.
If it's anything like the outside, it's about as scary as your Aunt Dorothy's meatloaf. Which can be pretty scary, but still.
Which I was like, one, she's not here to defend herself.
I'm sure they're happily married.
I'm sure there's so much happiness there. So much.
Maybe why they don't have a kid, because they never consummated, because he's an asshole.
Yeah. Essentially, the whole thing with this is they end up going in this spooky haunted house, which in the beginning is, frankly, one of those super lame carnival houses.
Rubber bats on strings.
Yeah, and they end up kind of going down... like an off track that transports them into like another universe.
Now I will say that this episode, compared to the other ones, this episode leaves the most open.
Yeah. Most unexplained.
Yeah. It leaves the resolution of the episode wide open, because what happens from your perspective as a viewer and from their, and from Uncle Harry's perspective as a participant in what's going on, is that things in the haunted house start getting more and more real, to the point where he is terrified of everything, because there's actual bats flying at him and the trees pick him up.
Well, they end up kind of taking a sidetrack and everything turns white, and then there's fog, and then they open up in an actual, like, at one point in a place with bats, and then they're in a real literal swamp.
Yeah.
And then they're in an actual literal graveyard. And
with real zombies.
Yeah, and there's like giant snakes, and I mean, there's all kinds of crazy shit going on. And
the kid is loving all of it. He's like, this is so cool. Look at all this cool stuff that's going on. And Harry keeps getting more and more scared of what's going on around him.
To the point where he's like, when they get to the zombies, he is truly like terrified, but he still has the wherewithal to say things like,
kind of reminds me of your aunt in the morning. Whoa.
He's not so scared that he can't make quips about his marriage.
Yeah. It's like, well, you know, I'm terrified I'm going to die, but I'm not so scared I can't joke about the looks of the woman I chose to marry.
Yeah.
Like, kind of a dick move still. Like, there's really no redemption for him, yeah. I don't think.
This reminds me of the rice paddies back in Korea.
Almost back in Nam?
Yeah, back in Nam. Almost as scary as your aunt in the morning.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, and we end up, it's like a side sort of mention. We do find out the kid's age. He's only 6.
Yeah, he does not seem like he's 6. He seems like he's like 12.
12. But because they actually say 6.
Yeah, and the twist in this is that you don't know if the stuff that Uncle Harry saw was real or not.
See, I don't think that was the twist.
To me, it was the twist, because at the end, the Crypt Keeper...
twist was that I feel like it actually happened, but that nobody believes him, and so he just pretends like...
But he doesn't even believe himself at the end of it.
Well, at first he does.
Yeah, but then he starts talking it out, and he's like, oh no, I guess that wasn't real. But then he gets all excited, because he's like, well, let's go do this, and let's do that, and whatever. And the whole point is that the Crypt Keeper comes in at the end, and he says that a little bit of an imagination can make the oldest people, like, young again. And that, to me, made it seem like maybe he didn't actually see what he thought he saw,
yeah,
but that it was his imagination running wild, and that's what changed him as, like, as a character.
Well, so I saw this episode as, like, it went one of two directions. One, it was one of three directions. First one is what you said. The second one is that when they went down that side cart, they ended up getting hit with some hallucinogenic drugs.
That could have worked.
And then the third one is that it actually happened, and that the Crypt Keeper essentially made all the stuff happen knowing that nobody would believe them when they came out, and then they would just think that they imagined it all, and that illusion of imagination would then spark his imagination going forward. It was like the kick in the pants to get him to want to go do. So, yeah. But that's kind of what we're talking about, is like, it's pretty wide open. There's really no true explanation of what happened.
And you don't get that a lot in children's,
where there's like no resolution.
Yeah. You don't get open-ended stuff a lot in children's, media, cartoons, and TV shows, because you, like, kids aren't typically that complex where you can say, like, it's open to your interpretation, kids. What happened to this character?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing was, is the aunt then says that the fortune teller was right. And that quote, the ability to enjoy life is measured in the depths of one's imagination.
Yeah.
Is the quote from the fortune.
Yeah.
Which the fortune was given by the crypt keeper.
Yeah.
So it is a sort of,
What happened?
And I like that. I really like this episode.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It was, like I said, it was way more complex than you would thought a kids show was going to be.
Yeah. Now, the last one
is complete and pure garbage.
Yes, it is.
Boring and not very well animated and acted.
The animation is weird. I will say that the animation for the Crypt Keeper changes here. So
why'd they give him a blonde wig?
Oh, that was like a thing as if he was like a ski bunny.
Okay.
That was like part of a joke. It was awful. But the thing is they draw the Crypt Keeper to have sort of like a more ghoulish, angular face in this, where he looks a little more like he does in the TV show, the live action one. But I don't know why. I mean, the other character was fine. They changed
the way that all the characters look. Like, even the humans are animated differently.
Yeah, they're all sort of more rounded looking.
You know what I likened it to? I likened it to, as I was watching, I was trying to find a way, like a reference point to what the characters kind of looked like. And to me, they almost looked like really early Seth MacFarlane, like Family Guy characters.
Yeah.
Like first, second season. Yeah. The way that those, before they got really defined, like just sort of that
sloppy.
Yeah. Amorphous blob type looking.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I could draw any better, but.
No, but still, I mean, you can tell what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
So this doesn't work.
Yeah. So the plot of this one is that there is a ski competition, and these two teens, I guess, they're teens?
There's three of them, actually. There's three teens.
But only two of them are really vying for,
because the third guy sucks.
Yeah. So they're trying to qualify to represent the team in some competition, some ski race. And the one guy is a win-it-all-costs, asshole, sabotage-your-friends type of guy.
Which is
don't be a selfish asshole, or a ghost will come out and break your ankle.
See, I felt like, so what I took from it was actually more a product of the times that it was created in the idea of don't win it at all costs, like that winning's not that important, that true friendship is all that matters.
Friendship is the real victory, or treasure.
Whatever, it's the same bullshit. But yeah. I felt like that was sort of the message here, and it was a very common sort of message in cartoons at the time. And I don't personally like that message.
No.
But I also don't, I mean, that's not to say that I agree with the bully asshole in this either, because he's a dick and he deserved to get screwed with. Maybe there's a happy medium, and I don't like that happy medium's never really mentioned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I also liked about this episode that, so you have the characters of Vincent. I think Vincent was the asshole. And then Tom, who was his rival. And Tom was very clearly a dark-skinned kid who was Indian? Or Pakistani?
I don't know.
He always talked like
A little bit.
Vincent, it's not.
No, he's Jamaican.
Oh, is that what he was?
It's like a Jamaican accent. That's what I gleaned from it, Jamaican.
I thought that he was Indian. But either way, Indian makes more sense because at least there's mountains and snow in India. There's not really any in Jamaica.
Yeah, but I mean, it could be just a kid who immigrated here.
Yeah, maybe.
See? They had a bobsled team, Sean. They can do
they
it.
They did. But yeah, this episode
cool
is
Cool Runnings! Sorry. Love that movie.
This episode really doesn't have a whole lot to offer audiences other than don't be an asshole to your friends is the moral.
Yeah, there's some sort of spirit, vengeful spirit.
That looks like a giant ice golem.
Yeah, he was a hiker left on the mountain, left to die by his friend.
Yeah, pretty gruesome.
Which is pretty bad. And
he couldn't go on any farther.
He gets turned into this golem who sort of trolls this kid all the way throughout the movie. And then he eventually learns his lesson
and all is good with the world.
Yeah, he becomes a good friend again.
The way that the Crypt Keeper is shown in this episode, too, he's not in his house like he is in all the other episodes.
No, he's out
the story.
Skiing.
He's there skiing. And what I was reading, because I haven't watched any of the other third season episodes, but what I was reading is that all the third season, that's what it is. Crypt Keeper is actually sort of interacting, and in some cases actually interacts with the people
in the story.
In the story.
Rather than him telling stories.
And then
about
he'll sort of stuff. Break the fourth wall and then turn to the audience and tell them about what's happening. Sort of like a la the Zach Morris powers.
Yeah. Time out.
Yeah. Which is still the best superpower ever, is the Zach Morris time out.
Yeah. Now go away for a second. I'm gonna mess with her sexually.
Zach Morris. Oh, well, that's probably more Screech that would have done it, but yeah.
Well, I mean, he was a high school kid. So at the end of the day, what did you like about this and what did you not? What did you think about this show?
I thought it worked. So I think it accomplished what they wanted. I don't know what the hell they were thinking making it in the first place, personally. I feel like the TV show, the original live action, is so highly inappropriate for kids.
Oh, yeah. Probably the most inappropriate thing. Ooh, I don't even know. I was trying to think of from Toxic Avenger to RoboCop to Tales from the Crypt. Which is the most inappropriate for children?
It's going to be a mix between Toxic Avenger and this.
Yeah,
because Tales from the Crypt is full frontal nudity, full on sex scenes, full on dismemberment, violence, blood gushing, all kinds of crazy stuff with like hyper realism. Toxic Avenger is very not appropriate for children, but it all sort of looks fake.
Yeah.
And there are weird scenes where like the Toxic Avenger has sex with the blind girl. Like, and it's weird.
Yeah.
And the only reason why she's into him is because she's blind. And it's uncomfortable on so many levels.
Yeah.
But the Tales from the Crypt live action should have never been made into an animated series. But
no.
I will say, I'm glad that it was. I think this is a good animated series. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
It is nice to have, in this modern day, I've been watching a series on Netflix, and it happens with a lot of series. I've been watching Longmire, if you're familiar with it. It's essentially a cowboy police procedural. And it happens with the same thing always happens with. It happened in Longmire. It happened in X-Files. It happened in Supernatural. It happened in a lot of shows where the show initially started as a Monster of the Week type show. Monster of the Week, Case of the Week, Criminal
X-Files
of the Week.
X-Files was like that too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the first two seasons of X-Files, they would go after a monster
of
the week.
Even the third or fourth season of X-Files to some extent.
Yeah, so eventually all those shows turn into
they exhaust their idea pool.
Well,
and now they have to build like
a long
story
yeah.
to try and keep viewers engaged.
And that's what I was getting at, essentially, is that you have a show like this that's an anthology show, which is cool because
how they get 93 episodes of that. That's
the
thing.
You have a new episode every day, and it's not something. It's something where you can. It's almost like long gone are the days of TV viewing where you could just pop in and watch an episode of a show, where you could just watch it. And you didn't have to have seen the one episode before it, or the one episode before that, or the, you know, some special meaning in an episode.
I mean,
two
there might be over
back.
Even say shows like Seinfeld or Friends or some of the sitcoms from the 90s, where there were a few overarching story plots, like George Costanza getting engaged and then eventually his wife dying, like. That's like that happens over a course of X amount of time. His getting the job with the Yankees and then trying to get himself fired unsuccessfully. Or friends with the love triangles and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But you could just drop in and watch an episode
and then
pop out and it doesn't really matter.
It's like Next Generation. There weren't too many like season-long arcs. And really, that's what TV has become.
Voyager had a lot of that as well. DS9... far less because it was a big giant sort of world building story.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that shows now, and if you think about any of the really, really popular shows, you know, your Game of Thrones,
but I think
Walking
that has
Dead.
To do with the way that we watch television now.
No, and that's what I'm saying.
Because we binge watch, right? You sit down like I did and watch 12 seasons of Supernatural in 6 months.
Yeah.
That's not healthy. I don't advise that, but I did it. What happens is, in the beginning, episode of the week is cool if you're only watching it once a week.
Well, but you know,
if
why?
You're watching three or four episodes at a time, or you're binge watching, say, every single night, episode of the week becomes tedious.
Well, yeah,
and then you need that overarching story to keep you engaged, to keep you watching.
Yeah, I was,
you know?
I was just thinking about it, and the you're right. The way we consume television now is on demand. We don't when you have to actually get somewhere at a time, at a specific time, on a specific channel, on a specific day to watch something, it's more ad hoc. It's just like, I'm here today, but I might not be here next week.
Is there anything that's like that for you? That you feel you have to watch? Like the day that it's out, or the night that it's out? You like
Game of Thrones, maybe. Yeah. But that's only because if I don't watch it the day that it happens,
somebody ruins it for you?
Yeah. I have
or
to,
The
like,
Walking Dead.
I have to stay off of the internet and whatever. But it's something where because we can get everything on demand now, we don't need these type of shows anymore. We don't need anthologies. We don't need episodic shows, because if I'm going to watch one, you're right. It does get, and that's happened in a couple of the shows that we've watched, where we've watched a bunch in a row and we tell people, don't binge this show because you're going to get tired of it, because there's nothing really, it's just one thing after another. There's nothing holding all the episodes together. And that's what we're kind of used to now. Whereas before, I feel like we could have watched, you know, 20 episodes of DuckTales in a row when we were 9 years old, and we would have been thankful for it, you know?
Yeah, even watching, say, like several episodes of DuckTales in a row, because I have Eleanor, is not necessarily something I can't really do that for a lot of stuff anymore, because it's just not the way that media was meant to be consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I've tried to start doing with her is build almost like a watch list. So, like, when the new episode of Sophia the First comes out, and the new episode of the new DuckTales comes out, which, by the way, is amazing. So, when the new DuckTales episode comes out, which I think is on Saturday, I think it's Saturday, and then it's online the next day, because I don't have cable anymore. When that happens, then, you know, I'll show her, like, one episode of this, one of this, one of that, and so that she kind of gets like a Saturday morning-ish sort of experience.
Yeah.
Instead of like binging stuff, because then I'm worried it's going to wear.
Yeah.
And she won't enjoy it as much.
And you don't want to sit your kid in front of a screen for 2.5 hours.
No,
four
I mean,
hours.
We always did on Saturday mornings when we were kids. But
we did it one day a week.
Yeah. Now it's like a regular occurrence. I think with this show, though, is it safe for your kids to watch? 100%. Is it safe for adults to watch? Sure.
You might catch some stuff that your kids wouldn't have caught.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you have any sort of nostalgic inkling towards the show or the live action, it's definitely something to watch, for sure. Is it the best thing we've ever watched? No. But I would definitely say it's better than average.
Yeah.
Definitely say better than average.
Yeah.
And I like that it's a sort of spooky-esque, Halloween-esque sort of show that's not Halloween. I mean, that's crazy, the fact that there's a show that's about all the spooky stuff that's not Halloween.
Yeah, and it went on for years and years.
39 episodes, it's more than most get.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, we recommend this. It's a good thing to just go back and watch. Well, recommend season 1 and 2. Don't watch season 3.
No, just, you can toss. If you really want to, we don't recommend it.
It's not even funny. It's not even funny bad. It's just sad bad.
Yeah, it's like mediocre, boring bad.
Yeah.
There are definitely things that are worse that are maybe entertaining to laugh at. But but this third season of this is just boring. But the first two seasons, for sure, watch.
Yeah. So that'll probably do it for this episode. So if you want to find us and talk to us on Twitter, our Twitter handle is @RemasteredCast. That is @RemasteredCast.
You can also find us on Facebook. Just search for Childhood Remastered. Please rate us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. The rating really helps us out.
Yeah, and we'd also like to thank John Howard for the use of our intro music, Nascent. You can find links to his SoundCloud on our website, childhoodremastered.com. And until next time, this is Sean.
And Chris.
And this has been your Childhood Remastered. We will see you next time.